If I'm going to have to start considering other people first, then who's going to take care of me? And the book recognizes sometimes, even though we can see what these things do to us, we're not always quite ready to turn them loose. And if not, we ask God to help us be willing. When ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I'm now willing that you'd have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character. Whoop! We're in step 7. Step 7 said shortcomings, but here he's using defects of character in the narrative on step 7. See what he's done to us? Confused the hell out of us for a long time. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. 2 very simple steps. Are you ready to have God remove those defects of character? Are you ready to turn them loose? If you are, you've done 6. Have you humbly asked him to do so? If you have, you've done 7. But I hope you don't make the mistake I did. Knowing that God is all-powerful, knowing he can do anything that he wants to do, I assume that all I have to do is turn to God and say, Okay, God, I'm ready. Zap me and give me the $29.95 special. And I'll be as pure as the driven snow. I'll never have to worry about it in the future. I found out that isn't true. God will do for me what I can't do for myself. He will not do for me what I can do for myself. And I got to AA and started working this program. My mind was a set of mental habits that had been developed in 40 years of living. To be selfish was the habitual thing for me. To be dishonest was the habitual thing for me. To be self-seeking, frightened was the habitual thing for me. To be inconsiderate of others was the habitual thing to me. That was my mind when I got here. Now, if I want to change those things, I've got to work against myself. If I want God to take away my selfishness, then I'm going to have to, in every situation that comes up, with all the willpower I can muster and all the help I can get from God, I'm going to have to try to practice unselfishness. And, oh God, that's hard for me to do. That's hard for me to do. But as God removes and I practice the opposite, slowly, slowly, the old habit dies and a new habit takes its place. Today I find in most situations that I am an unselfish human being. Not always, but usually I'm an unselfish human being. If I want God to take away my dishonesty, then I must force myself, with God's help, to practice honesty in every situation that comes up. Slowly the old idea dies and a new one takes its place. I find today that I'm a relatively honest human being. It was hard for me to change it, but with God's help, we made the change. If I want God to take away my selfish, self-seeking, frightened character, then I must force myself to do those things with God's help that I was afraid to do before. And just as importantly, force myself with God's help to quit doing some of those things that I was afraid to quit. And slowly, 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 I find that in most circumstances today, I react with faith and courage rather than fear. If I want God to take away my inconsideration, then I must start practicing consideration for other people, their needs and their wants, and put that ahead of my own, and oh, that's hard for me to do. But slowly, 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 with God's help, over a period of years, I have become a different human being. I now understand what the book says when it says, we were reborn. I'm not what I used to be. I'm not what I used to be at all when I first came to AA. With God's help, you and I can become whatever it is that we want to be. I think we're the luckiest people in the world. Most people out there are sick. Most people go into the grave not even knowing they're sick. We not only know we're sick, we know what's wrong with us. We found that out in steps 4 and 5. And in 6 and 7, with God's help, we have the tools to change ourselves. You know, we get to live 2 lifetimes in 1 lifetime. Most people don't get that opportunity. Now be careful. Because if you buy into this little deal we're talking about now, then that means from this day on, you are responsible for what you are. I can't blame it on Barbara any longer. You can't blame it on God, Mother, Father, or any other human being on earth. If I stay selfish, if I stay dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, it must be because that's the way I want to be. I don't have to be that way any longer if I don't want to. You know, I'm beginning to understand what the book said way back in the reading of how it works. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. You can't be selfish and unselfish at the same time. You can't be honest and dishonest at the same time. You can't be one who acts with courage and fear at the same time. You can't be considerate and inconsiderate at the same time. You're going to have to be one or the other, and it's up to us to make our decision, Joe.
Always a paradox, and I call it synonymous, isn't there? Everything just backwards from what you think it is. Some of us didn't know what a paradox was, but I'll give you one. How many of you ever called your sponsor so you could listen? Call up so we can talk, right?
And usually end up listening. And
hopefully. But the paradox here is that we have the doctor's opinion in the first four chapters to do steps one and two, 3.5 pages to do step three, 8 pages to do step four, 4 pages to do step five, and a whole chapter on chapter 7 on working with others. And the paradox is that the two of the biggest steps in all of Alcoholics Anonymous is two little paragraphs. And we sometimes skip over those babies as if they don't mean anything.
And let us say, too, that these two little paragraphs and these two little steps were those that Bill added the night he wrote How It Works to close up the loopholes. They didn't have 6 and 7 in the Oxford Group program. They had 4 and 5, but they didn't have any way to change themselves. Bill added 6 and 7 the night he wrote How It Works.
Yeah, the tools of change. That's what 6 and 7 is all about, the tools of change. The tools of acceptance, if you will. Acceptance is a process. It's not an event. The way I accept things is through 6 and 7. By the time I got to this step, I could see what I'd become through the 4th step and the 5th step, and I really didn't like what I had become. And a little doubt began to creep into my mind, and I wondered, I mean, can God really, I mean, really change me from that to something else? I mean, really? A little doubt began to come in. And I had to reaffirm a thought that was earlier in the book. It said, God is either everything or else he's nothing. God either is or he isn't. And what was my choice to be? And I chose to believe that he is. These are the tools of change, to change from what I had become to that which God intended for me to be. And I got sober, and I was reading that other big, big book, and there's a story in there. This guy's name was Judas. Judas could not accept what he had done. That's why he killed himself. That's the importance of acceptance, to be able to go through the process of acceptance so we can get over those things so we don't kill ourselves, or at least walk around miserable in life. There's another story, and this guy's name was Saul, S-A-U-L. And Saul was riding his ass on the way to Damascus. Well, that's what the book says. Big bolt of lightning come down and knocked him off his ass on his ass. That's the way I read it. Big dusted himself off, and a big old voice came booming down and said, "Hey, Saul." He said, "Yeah. Can we talk?" "Well, you bet we can talk." Got his attention, didn't he? This alcoholism may have got our attention, too. He said, "Can we talk?" He said, "Sure." He says, "Saul, you've been a very angry, resentful, hateful individual, and you've harmed an awful lot of people, and I want you to quit doing that." And he said, "Well, how do you quit doing that?" He said, "Well, do these things, 6 and 7, basically. And if you'll do those things, then you'll change. And when you change, we'll call you Paul." And we all know that Paul was one of the greatest writers the world has ever known. In a little town in Corinthians, he wrote a little letter there one day. Somebody, in reporting on what was happening, somebody had asked him a question. Said, "Paul, what is the secret to life?" Everybody wants to know that, right?
Secret for happy living.
Yeah. He said, "The secret to life is daily dying. The old Saul had to die so the new Paul could come alive." 6 and 7, the tools of change, the tools of acceptance, to change what I had become to that which God intends for me to be. Two of the biggest steps in all of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Let's take only 15 minutes. We're going to have to come back and have the drawing, and if we can get things done. Before we go any further now, I need to go back to fears for just a moment. You know, we talked about on resentments, that if you had a resentment you didn't want to get rid of, knowing full well that it might get you drunk, then you still needed to put it on the inventory sheet and get out in that 5th column and see what you're doing with it. And we talked about we can use it to rationalize and justify. Maybe we were so dishonest we wouldn't see the truth behind it. Maybe we were afraid of facing life without it because then we would have to become responsible for ourselves and et cetera. The same thing with fear. if you've got a good fear that's eating you up and you really don't want to get rid of it, then you need to get it on that sheet and look at it very carefully and look out into that fifth column and take a look to see what you're doing with it. You know, are we so dishonest with ourselves that we, again, don't want to see the truth? Are we such a self-seeking, frightened individual, we're afraid to turn it loose? Look and see what we're doing with it, because we can do the same thing with a fear that we do with a resentment. We can use it to rationalize and justify not doing things we really ought to go do, or just as importantly, to continue doing things that we shouldn't be doing. And sometimes if we're using it and we're rationalizing and justifying, we don't want to turn loose of it. And eventually someday it's going to get us in trouble. Let me give you, for instance, how you can rationalize and justify with fear. I want you to be honest with me. How many of you in this room would like to go back to school and finish your education? Could I see your hands? By golly, a whole bunch of you. I'm going to ask you one more question. How many of you are really going to do that? Be honest now. Less than half the hands went up this time. Why? Nothing in the world but fear. Fear that we won't measure up. Fear of failure. Fear of hard work. Actually keeps us from doing things sometimes that we really would like to go ahead and do. So if you got one of those, be sure and look at it very carefully and see what you're doing with it. You know, I've always wanted to build a set of kitchen cabinets. I love to work with my hands. I never would build them because I knew there'd be a lot of mistakes in them. They wouldn't look very good. People would laugh at them. And after I worked the program for a number of years, I finally found the courage to build a set of kitchen cabinets. Now, there's a lot of mistakes in them. They don't look very good, and people laugh at them, but I don't give a damn anymore. Okay, let's go to...